show where country music gets up close and personal.
Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
It's always great news when we hear there's a new Steve Warner album available. This one is called It Ain't All Bad, and Steve wrote or co-wrote all 12 tracks. The album showcases the many musical sides of Steve, a mix of country, rock, pop, and jazz. Steve has had 36 top 10 hits. 14 of those songs went to number one on the charts, including Life's Highway, Small Town Girl, and The Weeknd. He's a member of the Grand Ole Opry, a four-time Grammy winner with awards from the CMA and ACM as well. I am very pleased to welcome Steve Warner to the show. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing today?
I am doing terrific. Must be a great time for you with the release of this new album.
Well, it is. I'm very excited that it's finally going to come out, and we've been working on this album for, it seems like, a year or so. I think through and truth, it's eight or nine months. But it's been a long time coming, and really great that it's coming out. I can't believe it's finally here. So,
yeah, unbelievable. Now, this is your first non-instrumental album in 8 years, so we're finally getting to hear your great voice again.
Oh, thank you. Well, thanks so much. We got into a mode of the guitar records. I did two back to back. I called my self-indulging guitar projects. But we were lucky to get in with the Chet Atkins tribute album that we did. I always really wanted to do a tribute to my mentor and my pal, Chet Atkins, and we were lucky to get in there with that one and receive a Grammy. That'll make you kind of want to stay in that mode. We stayed in the guitar world and did another album called Guitar Laboratory. I kind of looked up one day and said, man, it's been 8 years since I've done a quote-unquote singing album, you know. So here we are. And luckily I had the time, eight or nine years or whatever, a period to collect songs that I've been writing through that period. And quite honestly, some of my favorite songs I've ever written was written to that period, and I kind of had the luxury of sitting on a few songs, and this became a collection of those songs.
There's some beautiful songs on here, and such a cross-section of styles. What ties it all together, of course, is your voice, some of the ballads we've come to expect from you. We're going to be sharing those on the show, and a great story song as well. I was reading that you say that you might not be singing better than ever, but you are definitely making better records than you used to. Can you explain that?
Well, I think, Dave, that I'm smarter at making records. I'm not sure if I'm any better at it, but I think I'm smarter at doing that, and that means that I think I choose material a little bit differently, probably. I think I'm a little more cautious on, you know, I think in the early days, when you're younger and you jump out there and just whatever, you just sing it, and, you know, I don't think I'm even thinking about it so much, but these days I kind of calculate and I'm a little more maybe cautious of what I try to do vocally. You know, I don't try to overstretch, you know what I'm saying? So I'm thinking a little more cautious in what I do. And I think I think about it a little more. I think I contemplate. And before I didn't really think about it. I'm just so happy I'm in the studio. In the early days, I couldn't believe I was making a record. But now I think I think about it and I'm a little more I strategize maybe a little bit more. So I think and quite honestly, through the years, you know, I think getting to work with some of the great producers that I have, I think I've accumulated a lot of tricks and wisdom and some neat ideas that I've kind of borrowed from Chet Atkins and Jimmy Bowen and Tony Brown and Tim Dubois and Scott Hendricks and Tom Collins, some of the great producers through the years. And I think I've borrowed a little bit from each and made it my own, made my own style out of it. So I think with a little bit of age comes the wisdom maybe, too, to do maybe I've learned something through the years. I don't know. We'll see.
That's so true. And you have learned from some of the best. And, in fact, on this album, I understand that you produced it yourself at your own studio in Nashville.
That's correct. I guess about 13, 14 years ago, about the time I left Capitol Records, I started building a studio, and we took about a year and a half to build this studio, and it's a building that's away from my house. Luckily, though, Dave, it's pretty nice. I always tell people the good thing is it's across the driveway. I can walk out in my pajamas and go to work. But the bad thing is it's right across my driveway, and I can walk across there. That's the bad part, too. It's right there. I can see it right there. But it's really good, and I go out and work, and my sons really enjoy working out there a lot when they're here. And it's really just become my kind of, it's kind of my clubhouse out there in a lot of ways, and I've recorded several albums out there and done a lot of guitar work, and so. But it's fun, and I produced, of course, I produced everything I've done for the past, all the way back to the Arista days. I produced No More Mr. Nice Guy was an album I did there in my first all guitar instrumental project. I think I had 22 guests with me on there, everybody from Richie Sambora to Larry Carlton to, you know, a lot of jazz guys and country guys, Vince and some of my buddies, you know, Brian White. But anyway, I produced everything since then. I produced, and I think there's something about doing, you know, for me anyway, there's something about producing and doing. No one knows me better than me. And, well, maybe my wife. I better rephrase that. But I really, musically speaking, no one knows me better. And I think I need to be the captain of my own ship when it comes to making records. I think I just, you know, I've had that insight as far as my own stuff, so I really enjoy it and love producing. That's my favorite part of it all, is making the records and bringing in players and, you know, casting what player would be good for this part, and it's really fun.
That is interesting because, I mean, you write great songs, but the production of any given song is really going to take it to that next level if all the pieces are there, all those special riffs, and as you said, casting the right players on it. So that's got to be the exciting part, taking it from the start. The song has just been written, and you played it on your guitar, and now you're working towards, you know, making it a great song.
Well, it's really a daunting kind of task sometimes. Early days, I remember sitting there and you think, well, I've got a great song. Now I'm going to bring great players in. And at first it's daunting because you look and you go, okay, I got all these, I'm paying all these guys double scale. They're all sitting here. I've got what I think is a great song. I just hope I don't screw it up, you know. Even if you got a great song, if you don't produce it right, and like you said, if it doesn't come across in the right way, and you know, right, it can be lost right there in the production, and you can have a great, great song that is lost, you know, that no one ever gets to hear it because of the production. So it's really it's a twofold for me. You know, you'd try to write a great song, but then you have to produce it too, and make sure that it gets done in the proper way and gets the right treatment that it deserves.
Now let's turn to one of those songs from the album, and as soon as our listeners hear this, they'll know you're back in your fine vocal style, singing these emotional, heartfelt songs that we've come to expect from you, and are just beautiful. This song is called "Don't Thanks. Tell Her I'm Not." You co-wrote it with Karen Rochelle, and I love the story behind this. If you could share it with us.
Absolutely. Karen Rochelle is a dear friend and really a super songwriter. And we were working one day at the studio. We were writing. We were writing quite a bit together. And we were sitting there. And just, we usually start out by having some coffee and we talk and catch up with each other. And that's usually my writing sessions start that way. But this morning we were talking about just things going on in my world. And I think my wife, Karen, had called, and whatever the conversation was, I don't recall, but when I hung up, Karen Rochelle said, she kind of made a comment about our relationship, my wife and I's relationship. She said something about, well, you guys have a great relationship, and she really looks up to you or whatever. She thinks you're a hero. You know, she looks at you almost like a hero or something, and you do her. And I made the comment, I said, well, gosh, If that's the case, then don't tell her I'm not. Just let her keep thinking that I am, you know, or whatever it was, some comment like that. And Karen Rochelle, we both at kind of at the same time went like, oh, my gosh, that's a good idea, you know. So we just started working on that. She thinks I'm a hero, so don't tell her I'm not, you know. And so we went toward that, and here's what we have, don't tell her I'm not.
It's a beautiful song. This is Steve Warner. It's from his latest album called It Ain't All Bad. This is Don't Tell Her I'm Not. On In the Country.
It's just me and the streetlights, a half a mile from home. There's a woman waiting there that I love so much, can't stand being gone. I've been afraid more times than I can count that I'll mess up and do a stupid thing and somehow let her down, 'cause she loves me and I don't know why she does, but she loves me. Lord, I hope that I'm enough. Don't let her see any less of a man than the one she thinks I am. And don't let her find out that I'm really not so strong. I'm trying to love her all I've got. She thinks I'm a hero. Tell her I'm not. Yeah, I've said some things I wish I'd never said. Now I'm driving around thinking out loud, trying to get it off my chest. I couldn't stand to see those tears falling down her pretty face. Knowing it's because of me makes me feel so ashamed, 'cause she loves me. Oh, and I can't figure out why she loves me. What's she thinking of me now? Don't let her see me as any less of a man than the I'm a hero. Thank you. thinks I'm a hero. Don't tell her I'm not.
And that is Don't Tell Her I'm Not. It's a brand new song from Steve Warner. You can visit him at stevewarner.com and learn more about him there. Of course, the album is called It Ain't All Bad, and we are discussing it here. Steve, I wanted to ask you about your good old friend, songwriting partner, and country legend, Bill Anderson. How's Bill doing?
Bill's doing great, and I know he'll be glad that you ask about him, and we're going to tell him that. And he's doing great. I talked to him a few days ago. He's writing a book right now, and I cannot wait to read it. It's what a colorful, incredible story he has in life he's lived. And I think that there's not a songwriter alive that has the longevity and the track record that he does. Incredible. And I talked to him a few days ago, and we had a nice little chat, and I've not seen him for a little bit, but we talk on the phone some, so he's doing great and still writing hits and still getting cuts. And we have two songs. Bill and I, he called recently and said, Steve, I think we're going bluegrass. He says, we have a song on Dale McCurry's new, Dale McCurry band, bluegrass, great bluegrass guys. He said, we have a song on their album. We wrote a song called Amnesia. And then he called me back and says, oh, we have another song on the Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver, two bluegrass cuts. So he called back and he said, I think we've gone bluegrass. We're going to be bluegrass riders now. So but Bill's great.
Awesome.
I love to work with him. So,
I've had a chance to interview him a couple of times in the past. And, I mean, I followed his career long before that. Used to watch him on the Grand Ole Opry when he did the behind-the-scenes interviews, which I loved. He is so personable and great at that. It's amazing to think his first hit goes way back, and then he's had, Sugar Land, Kenny Chesney recording his songs over the last few years. To still be that relevant is pretty amazing.
Yeah, you look at the longevity. We were talking about this the other day, going all the way from his early days writing hits for Will Ray Price and Jim Reeves, Lefty Frizzell, all the way up, like you say, to Brad Paisley and Sugar Lee. The longevity is just staggering. I always tell people we have a song on this album. Bill and I wrote a song called "I Want to Be Like You," and which is one of my favorite songs. But I always tell people, when I grow up, I want to be like Bill Anderson is what I want to be like. So he's incredible.
Now, you've had success with other artists recording your songs. You mentioned a few new cuts there. One I think back to is Long Neck Bottle that Garth Brooks recorded. That must have been a pretty awesome call to receive when you found out he was going to record that.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave, it was a roller coaster ride, and I'll tell you why. He was doing an album, and I believe it was No Fences. He was doing an album that Long Neck Bottle was going to be on that album, and he called and asked me to play on it. He called and said he was going to cut it. I've never had an artist call me personally to tell me that, but he called me to tell me their songs were going to be cut, but Garth did, and he called and he wanted me to play on it. So I was excited. I went down and played on the record, and his vocal booth was right beside where I was playing, so we had eye contact. He was right standing beside me when he sang it, and we cut it, and it just turned out great. And I just thought Alan Reynolds just hit it out of the park producing, and it was just beautiful and killed it. Well, anyway, now Garth gets into this the contractual. I don't know what it was, a big thing he had at Capitol there. They got into a thing, and it was a dispute, and I don't know. They weren't sure if the album was going to be released, and anyway, long story short, the album, Garth called me himself and said, man, this album might not be coming out. We just don't know what's going on. And it was a thing with him at Capitol. And so now fast forward, 3 years have gone by, and nothing. And I thought, oh, no, this is, you know, he calls me one day and, you know, explains that the album is coming out. And I'm just praying that the song will still make the album, and it not only was on the album, but it was the first single and the first hit off of the album called Sevens. And we were ecstatic. And I was actually with Garth in New York. We were traveling with Garth when it came out, and we all went, well, I don't think Garth, we all got in a limo and went down that night to the, when it came out at the record store, we all jumped in and went down, and I bought a bunch of copies because I was so excited and it was coming out. I'll never forget. That was a great time.
The new album from you, Steve, is called It Ain't All Bad, and the title track on it you wrote with Alan Chamberlain, who is a huge hit songwriter. And this song has a great message in it about the times we're in and also about how somebody in your life can kind of make things a lot better.
Well, I think so, and I agree with you on that. It's very positive, and I always tell people the title and this song, it's not, I should rephrase, it isn't great grammar, but it's, I think, a great song, so, or a great album title. But I think this song will be relevant, unfortunately, might be relevant for a long time, because the very opening lines are, standing at the pump, filling up my car and thinking $20 won't get me very far. So I think that may be relevant for a while, unfortunately. But it's really, like you said, it's very positive, and it talks about, as crazy as this world is, as long as I have you by my side, you know, I'll be able to get through it. I can tolerate it, you know. We'll get through whatever it is together, and it's really a real positive song. And I thought it was so fun, too. The tracks are fun, and it really gives me a great vehicle, too, to stretch out on guitar, you know, and show off some guitar licks as well. So it's a really fun song.
Another song on the album, and Ryan joins you on it doing some slide playing. The song is called What More Do You Want? And it's got a really cool feel. I've read that you were going for a George Harrison vibe to it, and it definitely has that. It's a little something different for you, not lyrically, but the production and what you've done with your voice on it.
Yeah, it is very different for me. I think people will, it's a departure from what I would normally do. But Ryan, my son, came in with a Leslie cabinet that's really made to be part of a Hammond B3 organ setup, you know, with a rotary cabinet. And you know, of course, a lot of those rock and roll guys in the early days, they played guitar through them. Eric Clapton was wonderful at doing that, and I remember those early Cream records. But he brought this Leslie cabinet in, and I thought, I'm going to play around with this, and I plugged it in and started playing through this cabinet, and I just started kind of playing that riff that you hear in the background, and then I started writing the lyric around that, and it wasn't long till I had the What More Do You Want? But it really had a Beatles kind of feel to it, and I thought, man, I need some George Harrison slide guitar. And my son, Ryan, plays great slide guitar. He's just, I really admire the way he plays, and he travels with Gretchen Wilson. He's out touring. He traveled and played with Jewel for a couple of years, and you know, played on some of her records. And he's really a talented player. And so I brought him in to play the George Harrison part. You know, he played George, and I played George Martin, and he played George Harrison. And the lyric, as you were touching on that, the lyric content is really straight on, pretty country. You know, she came home, I came home and found a note, she left me, and, you know, she took everything, and I'm lonesome, and what more do you want, you're taking everything, what more do you want from me, you know. So if it had a country melody, it'd be your stereotypical, you know, all you need is a train and going to prison and so forth, you know. But but it's a real fun song to play, and Ryan, my son, I'm proud of my son, he really killed the slide guitar on it, so I'm really proud of it.
Now, before we get to another song from the album to share with our listeners, the Grand Ole Opry is going to be celebrating its 88th birthday later on, so there's a big birthday bash
yes.
in the fall that you will be a part of. But if we reflect back in time, at age 17, you made your debut on the Opry stage with country legend Dottie West.
I sure did. I played bass with Dottie, and she was tremendous. Just a great, great friend and great teacher. I miss her terribly. And But I played with her for about 3 years. And the first time I was on the Opry with her, I'd only been in her band just a short while. And I remember leaving her house in Green Hills, an area that's outside of Nashville, riding in her big white Cadillac. And we drove down Belmont Boulevard going to the Ryman. It was at the Ryman still back then. And this would be about 1973. And we pulled in at the Ryman. We're turning at Tootsie's there on Fifth Avenue off of Broadway. Right when we're turning at the red light there, they were announcing, we were listening to WSM on the radio, and they were announcing, I think it was Roy Acuff was introducing her, and we were still turning the corner. And I'd never been to the Ryman, I'd never been in that building, and I was scared to death. And we turned the corner, and they were introducing her at the corner. We're still a block away. And so we pull in, and they usher her in real quickly, and I'm grabbing my bass out of the trunk, and I'm out there really by myself. I'm thinking, where do I go? I don't even know where to plug in, what to do. Anyway, we made it, but that was my first introduction to the Grand Ole Opry and the Ryman all in one. So
that's pretty amazing. And fast forward, we've got that big celebration coming up. What role will you have in the 88th birthday bash for the Grand Ole Opry?
Well, I'm not really sure. I know one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to do a concert that afternoon at 3 o'clock on that Saturday. I believe it's the 5th of October. And they do a package where you can buy a package to come in to stay at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel, and then it's a package
right.
where you go to the Opry. And also part of the deal is it's a concert, and we're going to do a full concert, like about a two-hour concert right there at the Opry in the middle of the afternoon. And then we play the Opry, the birthday bash that night. And usually what we do is whatever they ask us to do, but, you know, usually my role is I'll come out and bring – you know, we all kind of gather around. They usually have a big cake, and we wheel this gigantic cake out, and without trying to get it all over you, is usually the task at hand, without getting cake all over you. But we wheel that cake out, and we all sing and talk about the Opry a little bit. And in a lot of cases, it's a beautiful mixture of the old and new, and young guys, older artists, and I love that. The juxtaposition of the different eras kind of collaborating and clashing there. I love that. And so it's a lot of fun.
The brand new album from Steve Warner is called It Ain't All Bad. You can get it off iTunes. You can head to stevewarner.com as well for more details on that and a bunch of other news and videos, all that kind of great stuff at the website. We're going to turn to another song from the album called Arrows at Airplanes. I love the title, the whole message and theme, but the title is just cool. It's got that alliteration and it's kind of got a picture going on there.
Yep.
You co-wrote this with Rocky Lynn and Mike Sievers.
Absolutely. Rocky Lynn's an interesting guy. They both are. Rocky is a paratrooper who has been out of the Air Force, I guess, a few years now, but a great songwriter, too. But it was interesting. The last time I saw Rocky, he just had returned from Afghanistan, and he was explaining that they took him and he took his guitar and a small little PA system up in the mountains of Afghanistan, and he parachuted out into a camp with some guys, some soldiers, a small group of soldiers, and played them some songs. And that's what he did when he was there. He was a paratrooper. But I thought that's fascinating. I mean, if you're coming in with a guitar and some equipment and playing a few songs, and then they're coming to airlift you out later, you know, maybe the next day or whatever.
Wow.
But Rocky's a great guy and a great patriot, but he's really a good songwriter. And also Mike Sievers wrote this with us. He's a session guitar player here in town. I've known for 30 years and really a super guy, great songwriter. But we all jumped on the idea. I think Mike or one of my Rocky that came in with just that phrase, arrows at airplanes. And I thought that was so cool. Like you say, it just gives you such imagery, you know. And
yeah.
I think that whole song is a positive, really strong positive message about, you know, seizing and enjoying every moment of your life because it goes by so quickly. Like my dad used to say and quote out of the Bible, you know, it's gone like a vapor, you know, it's your life goes by. And I think as we get older, we were talking about it the other day, time just, it speeds up as you get older. It seems like it goes by so quickly. You look around and go, how did it become Friday again already, you know?
That's right.
And so this song is all about just enjoying every second. And there's the old man in this song is laying on the riverbank watching the clouds go by, and there's some couple boys that's skipping out of school. They say, hey, man, you don't even have any, you have your line in the water, you're fishing, but there's no bait on there. And he goes, hey, I'm not even fishing. I'm just shooting arrows at airplanes, throwing pillows at freight trains, watching the day go by, enjoying every minute of it. So that's kind of the positive message on this song.
Love that. Such beautiful lyrics. And this is a beautiful song. Great to have new music from Steve Warner. This is Arrows on Airplanes on In the Country.
There's an old man sitting on a riverbank with a cane pole in his hand. Two teenage boys skipping school, looking to kick up a little sand. Hey, your line's not even in the water, old man. You ain't got any bait. He just smiles and says, that's okay. I'm not fishing anyway. I'm shooting arrows at airplanes, throwing pillows at freight trains, trying to walk across this clear blue sky, loving every minute, 1 second at a time, sitting here on top of the world, watching the day go by. He said this world's full of people in a hurry, boys, driving crazy out in the fast lane. We're all on different highways, but we all end up in the same old place. So I think I'll sit here on this riverbank with my bologna sandwich and this paper sack. There's no place in this world that I'd rather be than lying right here on my back, shooting arrows at airplanes, throwing pillows at freight trains, just trying to walk across this clear blue sky, loving every minute, 1 second at a time, sitting here on top of the world, watching the day go by.
And that is Steve Warner, Arrows at Airplanes. It's off of his brand new album called It Ain't All Bad, and we're previewing some of the tracks here on the show and talking with Steve from Nashville all about it. It's great to hear these stories, Steve, and always great to catch up with you.
Oh, thank you. Great to be with you. I was going to say great to be out in the country with you here. It's super, and I love
that works, too.
That works.
That's awesome. That works. We'll cut that out and use it as a promo for the show. You never know.
Absolutely.
A quote that I read when you talked about listening to albums back in the day, and I can relate to this too. You talked about being excited for the next Elton John or Eagles album because you put the album on and you're not sure what's going to come next. What is it going to be, a ballad, up-tempo, something very different? And
yep.
I was the same way, always excited about buying those albums. Maybe it was Alabama or a Steve Warner album, and you know,
yep.
what's going to happen here? And can you talk about that and how excited you are and were listening to a full album?
Absolutely. You know, as a young guy, you know, I could not wait for the next, you know, like you're saying, the Eagles or, I mean, and I loved country, you know, I mean, I'd love country. I would, while I was waiting for the new Merle Haggard album to come out, I was also waiting for the new Eagles stuff to come or whatever. I loved it all, you know, I just loved music and, or the next Glen Campbell record or whatever, you know, I couldn't wait to, and I would take those LPs and I'd miss it and I love the big LP, the albums, and I would sit there while I listened and read every word on the back, and you know, oh, I couldn't believe so-and-so was playing guitar on this, and so-and-so played bass, and I can imagine being in the session while they recorded it, and you're looking at the album art, and back when there was such a thing as album art, you know, I just miss that, and I love it, and it was huge, you know, you'd hold it in your hands and read every word, devour it, you know, and I just love that, I miss it terribly.
I know, I love that experience too, and I can think back, one thing I always did, because I do a bit of songwriting on the side, especially lyrics, and when I would get a new album,
yeah.
and they had the lyrics, which was always the bonus, I would sit there and I would look through the lyrics first before I even played it. I just love reading lyrics,
yeah.
how they're structured, you know, that whole thing, so
yeah.
that experience in itself is cool.
Well, you know what, I always loved that too. Whenever I saw lyrics, I went, wow, somebody really went to the... They went the extra mile and gave us a little bonus here. You know,
that's right.
How cool and thoughtful of them to give us the lyric. And you can look and see who wrote it. And I always,
yeah.
and I would look at the publisher on it and like, oh my gosh, you know, that's a so-and-so publisher. And then I always try to include this myself as the who played what. You know, I love to look and see who, you'd hear this weird little sound on a record or whatever, and maybe it's a cool little steel guitar part or whatever, and I'd always go, well, maybe that's Weldon Myrick, or maybe it's Buddy Emmons. Who is it? You know, and I'd love, couldn't wait to open the album up, and you'd look, oh my gosh, it's so-and-so, Jimmy Day or whoever, and it's just, I love that. It's the roadmap that tells you who did what, and I always try to include that with all my projects. I really try to, and nowadays, you know, with the economy, you know, everybody's trying to, the labels, everybody tries to reduce all that down to nothing almost if they can because of the money. But I really think as much as you can give the consumer that, it's just that much of a bonus and that much better for the experience. You know, the customer, the buyer needs to, that's important, I think, to them, and to be able to follow with the roadmap and find out who's doing what and read those lyrics. And I really love that, too. I'm with you.
Yeah, the word you used there just sums it all up. It's an experience. You're getting more than just the music. If all
yeah.
that stuff is part of it, it's
yep.
just such a great experience to get
yep.
lost in that.
Well, I think anyone that remembers vinyl and records, they know, they're smiling hearing us talk because
yeah.
they know exactly what we're talking about. And it's hip and cool now for young bands to, you know, we're doing it on vinyl. You know, we have a vinyl record coming out. You know, like it's really...
That's
earth-shaking,
right.
you know, that's all there used to be. Everybody, you did that used to because that's what all there was, and it was incredible.
That's all there was.
And I used to, you know, then do you remember, I always watched my dad. He would, sometimes when our turntable was acting funny or whatever, he would take to get the weight, he would put the nickel or the penny on the arm of the needle up above the needle, and maybe a piece of scotch tape so it'd weigh it down just a little bit. You know, I remember seeing him do that. That was so cool, you know, setting the arm down right. We all were pretty good at it. You got pretty good at setting the needle right down at the start of the record, you know, just perfect, you know. So.
those are great memories. Those are great memories.
Exactly.
I love that. I love Love the old vinyl stories. Now, duet partners over the years, you've had several of them, including Anita Cochran, and that was a big song, What If I Said, such a beautiful song. Duets over the years, Steve, is there anybody out there yet that you haven't sung with that you look forward to someday?
Gosh, what a great question. You know, I'm very blessed. I really am that day that I've been able to make records. I've had a big hit with Nicolette Larson, and Glenn Campbell and I had a big hit. And that was an incredible experience. You know, Glenn's one of my favorite people in the world. And, you know, I love the Glenn duet that we did. Was we did it face-to-face, too. There was no trickery, no technology stuff. You know, a lot of people nowadays are, I'll do my part here, and you can do yours in New York, and then the engineer can put it together somehow, you know, later on. But
right.
But I've been lucky, too. You know, Barbara Mandrell, I did a duet with her on her album, Overnight Sensation. And I've got to record with a lot of cool people. But I don't know. I always wanted to do something with Reba. Back, we toured Canada, Reba and I toured coast-to-coast Canada pretty much 1 year. And we always kind of toyed with the idea of doing something together. I've sang on her records. I've sang back up on some of her stuff and played on some of her
right.
stuff. But I never... We never did a full duet, you know. I tell you something that was cool. I went to Blake Shelton and Miranda's. I went to their engagement party before they got married. And Blake Shelton had a karaoke set up there, and he was getting artists out of the audience to come and sing their he's like The Weeknd and some of my hits were coming up on karaoke bands, you know, karaoke.
Right.
And I've never in my life sang to karaoke before with my to my own songs. And he had me my song would come on and Blake would get on the microphone and say, "Come on up, Steve, come on. And so and then Reba was there and Martina and Trace Adkins and a whole lot of artists, and he would get the artists up to sing karaoke to their own songs. And it was hilarious. And I was really intimidated, that kind of, because I thought, I've never sang karaoke. And the tracks were not, they weren't the record tracks. I could tell that they weren't the real original tracks, but it was pretty,
right.
They were pretty close. And but anyway, my point was I got up and sang with Blake on something once, and he and I did one of my songs together. And then Miranda, I got up later and was singing to The Weeknd, and Blake made me get up and sing to The Weeknd, and Miranda came up and joined me. And she sang The Weeknd with me, and it was really good. So she might be somebody I would like to do something with. She's got a great voice, and
she does.
I thought we killed The Weeknd. You know, I thought it was really cool. So.
That is a great story. I'm glad you shared that. That's Miranda Lambert and Steve Warner doing a karaoke duet. I love that. And you talked about The Weeknd there, the song the two of you were doing at that particular time. Can you take us back and just briefly tell us about The Weeknd? Of course, we know it went on to become a big hit song. You play it to this day. It's a fan favorite, one of my favorites, yours as well. It just sums up a certain emotion, a time in life, I guess, that the singer's going through. But how big of an impact has that had on your career, Steve?
Yeah, that song was tremendous. I think I'm, if I ask audiences when I play, if I ask them, if I just randomly took a poll, what's your favorite Steve Warner song, I think that one would probably be, it might be one or two. It would be in the top two probably, because I just hear that over and over, that title comes up. And I'll tell you a quick story on that song, how it came to be. I was listening to a lot of songs with Tony Brown. He and Jimmy Bolin were getting ready to take me into the studio and produce my next record for MCA. And we were listening to songs, and quite frankly, I was just burnt out listening to so many songs. And honestly, some good ones, but lots of bad ones, but a few good ones, but a lot of mediocre songs. But as you might imagine, when you get ready for a record, you wade through some medium ones. But anyway, we were on the road, and I just spent all day listening to music last few days with Tony Brown, and I was pretty burnt out. And I got on the bus, and we're rolling down the road getting ready to go play a show. Now, I'm on the road thinking, all right, this is my sanctuary. I'm away from listening to songs, and I can get on here and rest and, relax a little bit. And as soon as we get rolling down the road, my piano player, Randy Hart, who still plays with me, by the way, but he was very good friends with Bill LeBounty, as I was, but Bill wrote The Weeknd, he and his wife, Becky Foster. And So I didn't know this, but Randy said, "Steve, I got a song I want to play you." So I'm only 30 minutes on the bus, and Randy says, "I want to play you a song," and I go, "Oh God, you know, do we have to do this?" He goes, "Oh, you're going to want to hear this song," and I go, "Oh yeah, that's what everybody says, you know." So
that's right.
So he puts a cassette. This will date this time frame. He puts a cassette tape in the deck on the bus, and he plays, and I hear the piano kick off, and it's The Weeknd, and the demo was fairly close to the record. I mean, it's with structure wise, and Bill's a piano player, so it was pretty piano oriented. And so, anyway, long story. As soon as they started playing, "A couple of days isn't a very long time. Why can't I just walk away? I used to be good at goodbye." I mean, I just was reeled in at that point, and I said, "Oh man!" And as soon as it got to the chorus, "At least I had a weekend, but I'll be in love for the rest of my life." As soon as it got there, I just stopped the tape, and I said, "You know, we need to." Of course, this is pre-cell phone, so I said, "You need to find a phone, and I want to call Bill the Bounty. We need to put this sucker on hold right now." And so we did. We found a payphone. That again dates my interview here, but we found a payphone, and I called home and said, "Put this song on hold," and called Tony Brown. And we, since I got in the studio, we got back home and started cutting the record, and that was one of the first things we did. And the Weeknd was a big hit, you know. And I remember that song too, Dave, not to go on and on, but I remember watching the players, and that's not an easy song. That's very complicated, chordally speaking, you know, chords. And I remember watching Johnny Jarvis, who played piano on this session. My vocal booth was right beside him. I could look over his shoulder practically, or kind of to the side of him. And I was watching him while they were working on the song, and I had not worked with him that much at that point. And he was reading a paperback book, and he had a green apple, and reading a book. And the book was down below his keyboard, so nobody could really see him in the control room. Nobody could see him reading. And I was thinking, they're working over the chart and talking about the song, and he's not even looking at the chart. And I was thinking, how arrogant of this guy to not even pay attention. And it's one of the first things I ever recorded with him. Later, we're back best friends in the world, and I get it way now. But back then, I was thinking, he's eating an apple and reading a book and not paying attention. And I was thinking, and then, of course, then they counted it off, and he played The Weeknd, and they did it like in one take, you know. And it was just like, I went, oh, okay, I get it. He had his part down is what it was. He had no worries, you know. So anyway, that's what I remember about The Weeknd. And it's been one of my biggest songs, you know, that I've ever done, really.
Wow. Well, thanks for sharing those stories behind that song, because it is a favorite of mine, and I know a favorite of most and many of my listeners. Yeah, it's always great to hear, and still to this day. Brand new album from Steve Warner is called It Ain't All Bad. You can order it from iTunes. You can head to stevewarner.com. There are great songs on it. A lot of great songwriters teaming up with Steve. He's written a lot of the songs himself as well. It's terrifically produced. We're going to get to another one of those songs now from the album. This one is a great story song. I love this. There's great guitar going on in it as well. You co-wrote it with Jim Rushing. It's called 48 Ford.
Yeah, I love this song, and I always have since we wrote it. I came out to Jim Rushing lived in a little area called Leaper's Fork. It's a real rural kind of area outside of Franklin, way out in the country. Beautiful area, and I think Faith and Tim have a place out there in Winona, and it's just a great area, very secluded. And I went out to his house one morning, and there was when I pulled in his door. We've been riding about once a month, and he had a cool place out there. He lives in Montana now, Jim does, but I pulled into his driveway, and there was a 48 Ford sitting there, an old pickup truck, and it was just awesome. It was rusty and just perfect, you know, just an old farm truck. And he walked out. I set my guitar down, and I climbed in the seat and played around with the shifter and was just loving this old truck. And he said, Jim walked out about that time, and he said, "You love my Uncle Bill's old truck, right?" And I go, "Heck yeah, it's awesome." And he said it was my Uncle Bill's. He just passed away recently, and I was kind of his only son, and I got his truck, and he left it to me, and I went out to New Mexico and got it and brought it back. Anyway, we kept talking about it, and we went inside and got our tablets out and we were going to write. And yeah, I just kept asking him church questions. I wouldn't let off the truck. I just kept saying, "Now, what kind of engine? What?" You know, I just kept asking questions about the truck, and finally finally Jim just looked at me and goes, oh, hell, let's just write about that truck, you know. So I just kept, you know, incessantly just writing, asking questions about the truck. I couldn't get it off my mind, and it was a cool old truck. So we wrote right there. We just started writing 48 Ford, and that's I love the line in the chorus. When the Sunday morning sun came up, that pickup truck would roll. Mama said that old preacher's words was medicine for our soul. Afforded me a chance, too, to play it felt like it should be like a Chet Atkins picking kind of song, you know. So I capoed up and played a Chet Atkins acoustic kind of a part. Jimmy Mattingly played cool fiddle part on it. And it's very, producing wise, wearing a producer's hat now. I wanted the lyric to be the big star of that song, obviously. So I just recorded it pretty minimalistic, you know, where it was pretty bare bones and not much going on musically, just that Atkins kind of guitar and a little bit of bass and Jimmy's fiddle. So.
And that's all you need on a great song like this. And I was just going to say, you know, whether it's a 48 Ford or another kind of car, another year, we can all relate to a song like this because cars are tied into memories. So anybody hearing this song is going to relate to it in some way.
Absolutely. I think so. And it'll take you back to your childhood. Or, you know, when I first started writing this song, it made me think, and I don't even know what year truck this was. It was probably, or, you know, in my mind, it was around this year. It could have not have been. But I remember as a kid, you know, my dad would throw us all in the back of this truck, and we're all standing up in the back of this truck, and he's going down to Stony Creek, and we'd pull in the creek, and he'd wash that truck. And I mean, you know, you look back now and go, it's amazing that none of us were thrown out of that truck. We'd all just stand up in the back while we're going down the road. But that's great memories. It takes you back to your childhood. And we had a dog back there with us, and, you know, we're all being tossed around, and, you know, it's just great.
Oh, great memories. And a great song now from Steve Warner. It's brand new. It's called 48 Ford on In the Country.
It's got a window busted, scraped and rusted, but it's beautiful to me. And when his flathead roared, those running boards saw miles of history. See the gun rack and hear the crack of my old pump 22. They kept all the rabbits running from post to Idaloo. One afternoon in the middle of June, we were picnicking at the lake. We were watching a couple of teenage boys tempt the hands of fate. When one went down, Daddy quickly found his rope inside the door. We got a second chance at life in the bed of our 48 Ford. And when the Sunday morning sun came up, that pickup truck would roll. Mama said that old preacher's words was medicine for our soul. Well, I was with my dad when he got it. Now he's gone to his reward. But he left 2 tons of memories in the shape of a 48 Ford. It's seen some years when we got it. Now it's a silent old antique. But all those pictures come to life when I'm sitting in that seat. I remember well my first kiss behind the hardware store. As a young man, I was shifting gears in the cab of that 48 Ford. And when the Sunday morning sun came up, that pickup truck would roll. Mama said that old preacher's words was medicine for our soul. I was with my dad when he got it. Now he's gone to his reward. But he left 2 tons of memories in the shape of a 48 Ford. Yeah, I was with my dad when he got it. Now he's gone to his reward. But he left 2 tons of memories in the shape of a 48 Ford.
And there is a great story song and a new one from Steve Warner. It's called 48 Ford. That is part of his new album called It Ain't All Bad. You can check out iTunes as well as stevewarner.com. Steve, let's talk about the song that closes off the album, and it is a beautiful song. You wrote it yourself. It's called A Thousand Winds.
Yeah, that song is that probably is the most personal song on this whole project, and I think this whole project, by the way, is little snippets of what's going on, little time capsules almost of what's going on in that 8-year or 9-year period we spoke of. And but I think the last song, A Thousand Winds, is the most personal of all. And I'll tell you, kind of the impetus. You'll be kind of surprised to know the impetus for that song is, I was a few years back. Roger Miller, the great songwriter Roger Miller, passed away, and about 3 months after he was gone, they were going to have a memorial service for him, a celebration of life down at the Ryman. And I got a call the night before from Chet Atkins, and Chet said, Steve, and this is the way he would did it, I never will forget, Chet said, Steve, I'm going to go to Roger's memorial service tomorrow. And he said, I'm going to go and I'm going to play, you're going to go with me, and then I'm going to play Amazing Grace and once, and then you're going to sing it once, and then I'm going to play it again, and then we're going to go sit down. And I go, yeah, that sounds great to me. And so I went with Chet, and we did just that. And so when we finished, we sat down, and I heard somebody, actually while I was singing, I heard somebody just, you know, couldn't, uncontrollable, right down in the front row, and it was Waylon Jennings. He loved Roger, you know. And so we went and sat down afterwards, and I noticed that they were playing on the screens on either side of the stage, they were playing video clips of Roger from various TV shows, and it was just hilarious. And as you might imagine, in 1 minute you kind of were moist-eyed, but most of the time you're laughing your head off. I kind of was thinking about my own mortality in a lot of ways, and thinking about, you know, I kind of referred back to that moment when I was writing this song, and I was thinking about my own situation, and thinking about when that time ever came that I would want it to be a happy occasion. I wouldn't want it to be a sad thing. And that's just the way Rogers was. It was just happy, you know, and you really just felt good about him and celebrated his life and his being here. And the way they presented that, a lot of people got up and told stories, and it was just great. And so anyway, I think that's kind of where this came from. And I went to another friend of mine's service too, right before I started writing this. And that was kind of the same way on a lesser. He was not famous like Roger, but it was a very positive thing. And those two, combination of those two, made me think that when that time comes, this is what I want, how I want it to be. And this is, song turned out to be thoughts on that, and really an open letter to my wife Karen of sorts, you know, that saying that, you know, I'm going to be right here. I won't be too far from you. I'm going to be right near you. You know, I'll be the hawk that's high in those branches. I'll be the rainbow on the water you always love to see. When you see kids making angels in the snow, that's going to be me. I'll be all around you. I'll be a thousand winds that blow. When you feel that breeze on your face, the bluebird on your mailbox, you know, that's all going to be me. And I think, again, I think that could be a poem. It's more of a poem probably than a song, but I really wanted to, you know, there's people that certainly could have done a lot better job than me, but I arranged the string quartet on that one too, and that one and another song. I brought in a little quartet and arranged that, and it was really fun to stretch out. I've done it before a couple times, but it was really, I really loved doing it with such a personal song like A Thousand Winds.
It's a great song, and just one of 12 reasons to check out the brand new album, It Ain't All Bad, from my guest, Steve Warner. Steve, it has been such a pleasure chatting with you. It always is, and like I said, I've been a fan since the start, since What I Didn't Do, and a little earlier than that.
Oh, man.
And love your stuff.
Well, Dave, thank you for that. I really appreciate it. Great to be in the country with you today, and glad that you had me on. I appreciate your time.
Well, it's been great talking with you, as always. My guest has been country artist Steve Warner. The brand new album, It Ain't All Bad, check it out at iTunes as well as stevewarner.com. I'm Dave Woods. For more country music interviews, be sure to head to inthecountryinterviews.com. Oh, man, Steve, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Dave. I really enjoyed that. Thanks for your time, man. Really good interview.